Hi, welcome to the podcast, The Socially Inspired Investor, where you can expand your knowledge of rewarding investment strategies and address environmental and socially responsible investing alternatives with important insights from experts in the field. I'm Pat O'Neill. These programs feature ESG, environmental, social, and governance stories in focus, and deep dive discussions with notable people in the industry. This time the topic, how investing with a focus on diversity, equality, and inclusion makes a difference. Also featured in companion articles in the Socially Inspired Investor Digest at sociallyinspiredinvestor.com. Diversity, equality, and inclusion. More companies and organizations are making an effort to create policies and practices that promote representing different groups of people, whether it involves age, race, gender, sexual orientation, religion, or other factors. So how are they doing that, and what does it mean for investors? Here to talk with us about that is Lorraine Wilson, Chief Impact Officer and Head of ESG Methodology at Novata. That's N-O-V-A-T-A. Novata deals with companies and organizations in the private sector addressing ESG issues. Lorraine, thanks for being here. Can you tell us more about you and Novata, the company you work for?
Sure. It's a new way for private markets to disclose on non-financial ESG metrics. But really taking a step back towards the earlier phase of my career, I started out as a political science or government major at Georgetown with a minor in African-American studies. And so have always had an interest in diversity, equity, and inclusion, and really feel like I'm bringing it all together with this role at Novata, focusing on disclosure, education, and adoption.
So today we're focusing on diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI. What do those terms mean, diversity, equity, and inclusion? And what is the connection to investing?
That's a great question. I'll share my own definition, which is looking at the policies that a company might have and also its performance on a set of metrics. So looking at underrepresented groups and how they fare within the company and on the board, how they're represented, and also how they're paid access to benefits. We could talk about stock ownership and how different groups participate in those programs. We could also look at board representation, who's on the board, and look at that from gender, race, ethnicity. Also check out historical performance. So how have all of those things changed over time?
Well, companies can't just hire people in order to look more diverse than just stick them in a corner somewhere, can they? They should develop them and encourage them to advance.
Right. Which is certainly tied into diversity, equity, and inclusion. Who has access to career development? What types of employees and what is the quality of that offering? So who gets to participate? How much is spent on it? And what is the quality of what you're putting out there? So certainly a lot under one umbrella, one with three letters, DEI. I'd also add living wage as a topic that's really picking up a lot of attention, but there are certainly implications on equity and who makes a living wage, which is something that really you need to dig into and assess.
Are there uniform and consistent ways to measure all of these DEI characteristics?
It's an interesting question, Pat, because I think that we are still moving towards consensus on, you know, what constitutes diversity, equity, and inclusion and the metrics that investors and other groups should be looking at. So the standardization is on the way, and I'm actually encouraged by the number of investors taking up the topic, you know, in their own way.
Do you have a couple of examples of companies or organizations that are taking positive steps?
Mm-hmm. Goldman Sachs recently came out and said that they're going to look at board of directors and have upped their requirements in terms of what they would like to see and how they will vote their proxies, you know, based on diversity at the board level. NASDAQ has similarly taken another look at diversity, equity, and inclusion as part of their listing standards. this past August, the SEC gave them the green light to require two diverse directors. Now, they're defining that as gender diversity. They're also looking at LGBTQ and underrepresented groups, so gender, race, ethnicity. It's encouraging to see action on that front. And then if we look more at the standards organizations, so VRF is now looking at human capital specifically, but also DEI and looking from an enterprise value perspective. So they're looking industry by industry and how these different metrics affect the value of a company over time.
So what do you look for when it comes to the makeup of a company's leadership team, the decision makers?
I'll give you an example. Percentage of underrepresented groups on the board, to be sensitive to the fact that there are different reporting requirements and standards abroad. In the US, we're looking for the same level of disclosure that's really gained traction at public companies. So that component one form looks at gender, race, ethnicity by job category. It's actually in the US, it's been around since the 1960s. And it's an example of, you know, investors not looking to reinvent the wheel, but realizing that there's this wonderful disclosure companies are already submitting to the government that they could just make public to investors. And many companies have stepped up to do that, went from just a handful in 2020 to over 100 in 2021.
Does any company in particular come to mind?
Sure. Intel is an example of a company that makes that information available on their public website for their US employees, and also talks about hiring practices and wanting to reflect the race and ethnic breakdown within in the communities with which they operate. So that's an area that we're looking at. Another, and this has really gained traction in the UK, is that gender pay gap.
Uh-huh.
And so digging in to the unadjusted pay gap. So we're not adjusting for education or other factors, but really the unadjusted gender pay gap. And we're looking at that by gender, but also by underrepresented groups. So those are just a handful. You know, the composition of the board, looking at the workforce demographics and looking at pay equity.
What about the performance of these companies? Is there any evidence they're doing better from a bottom line standpoint? Does it make a difference one way or another?
You know, that's something that investors are always looking for. It's a question that we get asked often, and look at the data, right? And so when we look at the S&P 500, the intangible, the value of intangible assets, and just how much market value of a company is based on that, it's risen from 30% over years to 90%. And we know that people, workers, really make up a big percentage of that. And so beyond, I think the performance is something that SASB will be digging into, looking at recruitment, retention, products. How closely aligned are your products and the customer experience with what your end customer wants and the value that DEI plays, having a better understanding. We're looking at risk mitigation and how, you know, sound diversity, equity, and inclusion practices might play out there. And then beyond, there's research from McKinsey that looks at both gender and racial diversity on executive teams and has found some significant outperformance that companies that were more diverse, actually more racially diverse, actually outperformed companies that were not. The research is adding up publicly their support for companies focusing on these different topics. There's support for CEOs, for example, speaking out on equity, particularly in the US. So, you know, social issues and equity specifically. So the support is there and the research is there in its early days. And I think it's continuing to gain traction and attention.
Well, going beyond the companies and their practices, are there certain types of investments we should be aware of or investments that are being created?
Certainly. So we're seeing more in the way of product launches that are touching on this topic, right? You know, my mind always goes to a group at Natixis that really took the time to look at their own corporate practices.
Natixis, that's the French-based investment banking firm?
Right. So they did some work internally looking at their own policies and procedures with regard to their own employees and their local community. And then they launched their racial equity portfolio, which really looks at S&P 500 companies and does both positive and negative screening. And so for me, that process was just, you know, hopefully a process that others will look to repeat. So looking internally and then, you know, moving forward with an offering that made sense for their particular set of clients. There are certainly other products, ETFs and others that are looking at equity or honing in on specific groups and are doing it in a thoughtful way. So I'm encouraged by the launches.
It seems that these companies with more diverse policies could also have a favorable impact on the communities where they're located.
Agree. One of the examples that I've come across through my work is JP Morgan and their second chance hiring. So they were sort of pioneering in the space as far as a financial services, you know, large company, taking a look at what they call banning the box. So this checkbox that you have to check if you have a criminal background. And what I've seen, you know, their disclosures say that 10% of their new hires actually have criminal backgrounds, but nothing that would impede their ability to conduct their duties at JP Morgan or, you know, affect their coworkers or clients.
10% of new hires with a criminal background. That's pretty amazing.
Right. And so you talk about community outreach and really strengthening ties with your local community. I've just been impressed by the work they've done. I'd recommend digging around on their site because it's not just the hiring practice. It's the additional work around policy, influencing policy and trade groups.
I'll have to check out JP Morgan's site. Do you think the typical investor, the typical consumer, can influence companies to adopt more DEI-friendly policies?
Absolutely. I mean, pulling it back a level and looking at just social, so the S in ESG, there's compelling research from groups like the Harris Polling Organization and Just Capital that looks at Americans and their spending practices and how they select an employer. And the public largely believes that they can have an influence, you know, whether it's directing their purchasing dollars, how they look for an employer. And a lot of that is based on how a company stands up, you know, what their policies are. And I think just the question came up in a discussion today, this question of your local community. With the rise of social media, I mean, there are a lot of these issues are just taken up and you're on a global stage. So it's interesting how that's developed. And certainly George Floyd and the summer of 2020, how a lot of these topics, these issues just went viral. And then the expectation that CEOs respond has really increased.
Uh-huh. Do you think the Black Lives Matter movement has been an influence? Do you think it's gotten the attention of many companies enough to help push them to alter their policies?
Absolutely. I think, you know, after that summer, we saw proliferation, corporate statements and policies. And so for those of us focused on measurement, now we get to work and we look at the actual quality of those policies, the follow through, you know, the performance. So absolutely, I think it really sparked a conversation globally. And it's up to those of us who are looking at the data and the numbers to follow through and compare.
We're talking with Lorraine Wilson, Chief Impact Officer and Head of ESG Methodology at Novata. Lorraine, it seems that while a lot of companies make promises about their diversity and equality and inclusion commitments, they don't always follow up on them. I mean, who's going to hold their feet to the fire when it comes to gender and racial hiring and pay and all the rest?
I think that it's our shared responsibility. And so I think it's up to regulators, it's up to the public, certainly the stakeholders of a company, its workers, its shareholders, customers are interested and are holding companies accountable. You know, it's been interesting to see how the role of the board has changed over time. Our surveys looking at the responsibilities of board members and starting with their response to summer of 2020, you know, should that focus on human capital on these social issues be permanent? It's an interesting question. And we'll see, there are other large public companies linking performance on DEI to executive pay. So still in the early innings, but I think there are more methods for tracking, transparency, accountability down the line that are coming to light.
So investors can play a bigger role than they think. They can put more pressure on companies and perhaps on their financial advisors, and they can do more research on their own to see what kind of investments align more closely with their own personal views.
Absolutely. And you know, Bank of America, where I worked, and even our fiercest competitor, Morgan Stanley, they are now looking at diversity, equity, and inclusion within the asset managers with which they do business. So it's, you're right. I think that investors of all stripes are looking at this topic and looking at, you know, the people managing our investments. What are the practices at their firms, but also the portfolio companies? What are the practices at these portfolio companies? And I'm hopeful.
And companies must be feeling the competition. If a rival is making inroads in diversity practices, it's going to put more pressure on a company to get up to speed.
Right. And that makes sense when you think about talent attraction and retention and even turnover. You know, those are some of the pillars that that the industry is looking at from a DEI perspective.
Again, for the typical investor or consumer, what kind of research can we do to explore companies we're interested in to see how they're doing with their diversity policies?
It's a good question, Pat. And I will give you the honest answer, which is that a lot of the data that's released is still largely unstructured. So you might find information on gender pay equity or the racial ethnic breakdown of a workforce within a CSR report, might be on a company website. So still early days from a disclosure perspective, which is why it was such a focus for us at Novata, but really for anyone in the space to really push for standardization because of that challenge where really you need a human to go out in search of the data, pulling it from different sites, checking formats and making sure that we're comparing apples to apples with this voluntary disclosure.
Lorraine, in looking over the entire issue, what inspires you about what's happened and what are you optimistic about looking down the road?
I'm inspired by the progress that we've made in such a short amount of time, you know, going from statements of support to actual change at these large companies in terms of the policies place. So very encouraged by that, but also just the representation, the types of people who reach out on the topic, who want to learn more, who are interested in setting up policies at their own organizations, are interested in disclosing and doing a better job of that, of capturing the information. So I'd say just the number of voices in the room is encouraging, and the federal government. So I can't say enough about the efforts I've seen different agencies really stepping up and expressing an interest in continuing the conversation, but also lending resources to these efforts.
And that's one thing we haven't delved into much, the government's role in this, including at the state and local level, the potential impact in local communities where people see what's happening on a personal level.
Right. And so we've seen on a state-by-state basis with California setting a requirement for women on boards, but we'll have to stay tuned to see what happens on a national level.
You talked a little earlier about risk mitigation, Lorraine. It seems there's more risk for companies that don't take this issue seriously. If a company, for example, puts a lot of money into developing a product or service, then doesn't meet the social standards one would expect, that investment could go down the drain. So how much is so-called cancel culture part of the awareness of a company when it puts together socially responsible policies?
That's a great question. I mean, I look at my own spending practices, and you're right. Sometimes companies miss the mark. I think there are some really notable missteps that have taken place within the apparel industry and honed in on stereotypes. So imagine putting a product like that in your shop window and just the reaction from customers asking about the layers of approval, the representation within those different companies for something like that to get to market. You have to apologize for. And that certainly I would put in the risk category where without the right representation within your team, how could you bring together the right types of products and engage your customers? There are some really interesting efforts underway. I've seen a lot of retailers in the past couple of months signing up for the 15% pledge. So if we're going on the theme of, you know, consumer spending, retailers that are directing 15% of their purchases to the Black community, I've seen it from a professional services angle with John Rogers at Ariel Investments talking about business supplier diversity, maybe your paper goods or other products that you're purchasing for your business. But what I find interesting about this new conversation is, you know, looking at your service providers and the types of folks that are represented in those roles. And that's really gained traction. I was fortunate enough to work on an investor coalition, a working group focused on disclosures methodology within the municipal bond space. And one of the factors that really led us to expand the group was representation. And so we brought in two minority-owned firms and felt that it was important to have their voices in the room for that initiative.
So for it to work, you're saying this commitment has to run through every department, every part of the company, to become part of the company culture. And Nevada and similar endeavors can be watchdogs of sorts and offer feedback.
Yeah, it's not just one individual. I think it's a huge undertaking. I'll give an example of a practice that I thought really worked well, and that's Bank of America, where I spent 7 years in the committee that they stood up, led by the vice chairman. So it just shows you how seriously they were taking this work. But participation was, you know, pretty vast. And so team leaders had to elect different members of their teams. Really, it was everyone's responsibility. And so that just shows you how big of a mandate it was, set internal hurdles that they wanted to meet. And you certainly, by improving your practices, you can improve your employee satisfaction scores. And it's also tied to employee turnover. So that was a big undertaking, and leading the charge, it was certainly one of the most senior people at the organization.
Do you think it cost a company a lot of money to do this, to adopt and maintain solid diversity practices?
I think it costs them a lot of money not to do it. You know, there are certain entire industries at risk, and that's something that the group behind the SASB standards has been talking about. When your workers are aging and it's a more homogenous group, you think about replacing your workers. And in some industries, it's really going to be an uphill battle if the experience of underrepresented groups within that industry has not been a good one or a positive one, and that they haven't attracted women. Think about how you'll replace your workers and bring in future generations. So I'd say it's critical.
And that seems like a good place to wrap it up. Lorraine, thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you. I was really glad to be here today.
We've been talking with Lorraine Wilson, Chief Impact Officer and Head of ESG Methodology at Nevada. By the way, you can register to receive the Socially Inspired Investor Digest and podcast. There's no fee. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. This podcast is copyrighted by Seasons of Advice Wealth Management. It is published and provided for informational and entertainment purposes only, and not for individualized investment advice. Please go to our website, soawealth.com, for additional information. We'll be back next time with more ESG stories in focus and another deep dive discussion and companion articles in the Socially Inspired Investor Digest. Our podcast mission is to make socially inspired and ESG investing more consumer-friendly and achievable. This is the Socially Inspired Investor.